Good morning. It's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. 5 decades ago, before the riots of 1968, Baltimore's Sandtown neighborhood was a vibrant community of about 40,000 laborers, professionals, and artists. These days, less than half that many people live there, and the numbers paint a picture of a community in poor health, with high unemployment, deep poverty, and children not attending school regularly. Even with those struggles, the fabric of community relationships holds strong. The combination highlights the depth and stubbornness of the social problems in neighborhoods like Sandtown. And as so many residents and outsiders are asking, what can bring stability to this part of West Baltimore? More jobs? Improved housing? Better coordinating leadership among these different groups? To talk about the investment in Sandtown, past and present, Elder C.W. Clyde Harris is here in the studio with me. He's a native of Sandtown, pastor of Newborn Community Faith Church, a community activist, and an urban farmer. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And joining us on the line from the Washington Post, where he is national economics correspondent, is Michael Fletcher. He's lived in Baltimore more than 30 years. Welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Sheila.
Now, Michael Fletcher, you co-wrote an article this week that the Post headlined, "Why Couldn't $130 Million Transform One of Baltimore's Poorest Places?" This was $130 million put together in the 1990s by the city of Baltimore, led by then Mayor Kurt Schmoken, the developer James Rouse. You write that affordable housing was one of the first steps toward revitalization and investment in Sandtown. What kind of projects were put in place?
Well, they like you said, they renovated over 1,000 housing units. They brought together different social service groups. There were renovations done by Habitat for Humanity and others. And the idea was not just to, and they knew this, that they had to do more than sort of transform housing, but that was the first step. But as part of that, the city also tried to launch sort of the kind of social service programs that they hadn't in the past. They had people helping to organize community groups. They had social workers going door-to-door offering health screenings. They attached other people to the schools. So if a student was absent too much, someone would come and knock on the door and find out why that student wasn't in school. The idea was to uplift the community. You know, it was called the Nehemiah Project, and the idea, just as Nehemiah helped rebuild Jerusalem, the idea was to rebuild Sandtown and do it not just through bricks and mortar, but just through trying to transform lives, which proved to be a very difficult task.
It's a big challenge. Elder Harris, you're a lifelong Sandtown resident, right?
Absolutely.
So you were there.
And I was a part of that movement, started in 1990. And from it developed a nonprofit called Community Builders in Partnership, Inc. Yes, a lot of money was poured into our community. And there were some mistakes made, but some good came out of it also.
What was the good that came out of it?
The good, every house that was built, that was one less lead-abated home.
One less home with lead in it.
That's right. The Sandtown homes, Sandtown Habitat homes, were geared to people who could not afford homes. Although we had community residents purchasing a nearby home, most of the people came from outside.
So it didn't lift up the original residents of Sandtown as much as you had hoped?
Not really, because they could not afford those homes.
Michael Fletcher, what would you say Sandtown's most pressing problem is now?
It's a combination of things. It's probably hard to single out, but I think sort of the lack of economic opportunity is big, but also all of the problems that spin off of drug abuse and kind of the high incarceration rate. I think these things have torn at kind of the social fabric of Sandtown. But it's interesting, when I was back in Sandtown last week following the disturbances, I was talking to a number of old-time residents, and it's interesting how many people remembered neighbors who used to work at Bethlehem Steel, who worked at the GM plant, who worked in, you know, old industrial Baltimore, which is obviously shrunken when those jobs employed, you know, just armies of people. It made all the difference. People who get substantial employment with really little sort of academic training, and that kind of opportunity is gone. And what's moved in is a sad refrain that we see in many communities, not just throughout Baltimore, but throughout the country, where drugs become kind of the, almost the economic engine in some ways of the neighborhood. There's a drug treatment center in the community, the Penn North Community Resource Center, that's just a huge enterprise. You know, hundreds of people a day coming for NA meetings, people in residential treatment, and it's all to the good that people are getting treatment. But it's also a sad commentary that you have all of this happening in a building that used to be Frederick Douglass High School.
You have Bright Hope House, which is a part of St. Gregory, and you have my facility, which is Martha's Place for women who are suffering with the addictions of drugs and alcohol. Integration played a part of our community's demise. Our best and brightest, after we became integrated, Baltimore City was able to move anywhere in the United States and live. I could walk two houses away from mine, and I can walk past a home of a professional who's a teacher, a doctor, a lawyer, a person of Congress. And we could see that, people waking up in the morning and going to work. And we would say as a child, this is something that we would have to do when we get home. That experience is not seen much in
kids,
our community.
Kids today don't see people getting up and going to work.
I smell the coffee of my mother and father before I got up in the morning, and I know what was happening. They were getting themselves ready to go to work. And I knew that one day I would have to do the same thing.
Yeah, Sheila, it's interesting. I had a conversation last week with two gentlemen, both guys, they live at the Penn North Center, but they had grown up in Sandtown, and one guy was over 80 years old, the other guy was 69 years old, and these gentlemen talked about their childhood and the people they grew up with. These guys, they readily admit they had taken the wrong path, they ended up in prison, but they said they had friends they grew up with who went on to be lawyers and business people and that kind of thing. You had this kind of social diversity, you know, a generation or two ago, and that kind of thing has all but disappeared from what I can tell in Sandtown. So it makes a huge, huge difference, kind of what you see day to day, what the examples are when you're a young person, and what you see your possibilities as being.
What folk don't understand is that our resources are there. If you look up the 21217 area, check the churches in that area.
The zip code.
And the zip code 21217. And in Sandtown, there are more than 52 church. And that's a lot of resource. I, myself, and along with a newborn and new song alone, it's a few memberships in that church, but we built over 300 homes. We have a 10-point-some-million-dollar school that we built, a $1.1 million facility, Jubilee Arts, that's working with our kids, Martha's Place, and health centers. We did that with two church alone.
On WIPR, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking about investment in Sandtown with Michael Fletcher, Washington Post economics correspondent, and Elder Clyde Harris, pastor, community leader, and now an urban farmer. Elder Harris, what do you think could lead to more jobs?
Training. We have an organization that's called Strength of Love 2. We follow the pattern of Delancey Street Project in San Francisco. We work with returning citizens from incarceration. We house them, we feed them, we train them. They learn three trades, and they then themselves can become entrepreneurs and not have to depend on someone hiring them. One of our trades is, as you aforementioned, farming. We have an acre and a half of property that was leased to us by the City of Baltimore. We're in partnership with the City of Baltimore. And I have about 18 hoop farms that is manned
These are sort of greenhouses made from big hoops.
That's manned by returning citizens from incarceration.
Michael Fletcher, you're an economics correspondent. What do you think could create more jobs for Sandtown residents?
I think you have to get some kind of training. You have to have better educational outcomes. And that's such a difficult thing because it could become such a cyclical thing. We look at who does best in school. It's the people who have the best support at home and the most affluence at home and that sort of thing. But that's the kind of thing that would make a difference in this current economy that we live in. We could talk a lot about what used to be, but that's not coming back. So you have to have that. And if the neighborhood could have some kind of economic integration, if it could somehow attract kind of a broader range of people, but that's another difficult proposition given sort of the raft of problems from crime and, you know, and the level of drug abuse and all of that. You know, you have to find a way to sort of form a beachhead around that. And that's what's so tragic about sort of the poor relations with the police, because that community needs the police probably more than most in Baltimore. And it's sad that the relations between that community and the police seem to be poisoned. And hopefully that can change.
I'm grateful to both of you for talking to us. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having us, Sheila.
Thank you.
Native Sandtown resident Clyde Harris, pastor, community leader, urban farmer, talking about investment in Sandtown. Michael Fletcher is economics correspondent at The Washington Post. On Saturday, Sandtown and several nearby neighborhoods will hold their 8th annual Boundary Block Party starting at 1 p.m. at the park at Pennsylvania Avenue and Pressman Street. It's organized by Jubilee Arts and the No Boundaries Coalition. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. And our thanks to Maryland Morning's former senior producer, Lawrence Lanahan, for his help in putting this segment together. I'm Sheila Cast, ahead on Maryland Morning. What to look for at the Maryland Film Festival, which starts tonight. Stay with us on 88.1.